What is going on, guys? Matt Downs with Daily Grind Fantasy Sports to break down this 11 fight MMA slate. Cannot wait to break it down with Kevin yet again. Guys, we have a full weekend full of sports, guys. We have NBA, MLB, esports, MMA. Feel free to sign up for Patreon today because the subscriptions start up again tomorrow. Tomorrow is the best time to sign up for Patreon. Again, $20 a month gives you a full community of Discord chats, and everybody is willing to help you guys out. We also have leverage sheets. You guys will need leverage sheets for MMA, for MLB, for NBA. We break all that down. Kevin, how are you doing today, and are you ready for this weekend?
I am doing great, and I am very ready for this weekend. I am excited to get back some normality. I mean, the fight night from last week, just to get into the recap real quick, lived up to the hype in the sense that the 15 fights it was made the optimal lineup pretty odd, as we saw. We did pretty well for the most part during that slate. Definitely not our strongest night, but the way I kept describing it in the Discord was, we're going to win some money and come out on top here, but it's probably not by a lot. And I think that was the case for the most part. As I said, it was going to be one of those slates where even the pros and the sharks were going to get beat up a little bit. I mean, 15 fights is ridiculous, and I'm definitely happy to get back to some normality with this 11 fight slate on Saturday. but yeah, so let's just run through the fights from last week real quick. We had Wood from the rip. Did well, did as predicted. Couldn't get the finish, though, unfortunately. Ameev also couldn't get the finish, though, as I predicted. We faded him. We also faded the women's fight between Panny and Betch, and that was a good fade. Also pretty low scoring. Non-finisher. We had Bozer. He got the finish, which was awesome. Was all over him. We had Grundy. We talked about him being chalk, just the highest owned underdog. And he actually hit a decent price point in a loss. He's definitely outclassed on his feet. He's not a good striker. But, I mean, he got enough takedowns where I think he had like 40-something points, which helped us get to that cash line. Obviously, having a loser definitely didn't help us hit that first place in the tourney. But it did help a little bit. We had a ton of Aspinall. Aspinall crushed it for us, got the quick knockout, nice straight down the pipe. I mean, that guy could be the heavyweight future. I want to keep my eye on him. We didn't have Dalby or Ronson, but Ronson got the upset, so that was definitely some leverage for some people there. We had some Jai Herbert, especially as we looked. The line really got close to even. It just kept getting closer and closer. By the time the fight started, I think it was a near even line, and he was 7,700. So it made a lot of sense, and he looked like he could have won the fight at a lot of different times. He looked better on his feet than Trinaldo, but ended up getting finished off, and he gassed out, blew his wad. No urgency on the bottom, and definitely got a little sloppy there, and Trinaldo got the finish. Khamzat smashed as expected. We're all over him being obviously amazing, but even with this price point, I still don't know if he lived up to that $9,800 price tag. As we talked about, it's a ridiculous price to hit, and I don't think he did in terms of just consistency or how much you want essentially to pay for someone who gets that price point. Mm-hmm. Oliveira won, which was nice. I had him in some lineups, couldn't get the finish, which kind of sucked a little bit, but whatever. We had all Paul Craig due to his slightly cheaper price, and he hit his money and then some with a dirty submission. That was awesome to see, fun fight to watch. There's also a little beef going into that one, which always adds a little extra fireworks to it. I did say I liked Esparza to win as a heavy underdog, and she did, which was awesome. I also said she probably wouldn't finish, and she definitely didn't do that, but she's a good fighter. Carla Esparza is a very good fighter, and that's why I liked her to knock off an undefeated fighter, which she did. So might have got a win out of that one. I did say you want a piece of Gusty and Werdum. I had Gusty as one of my top picks, and Werdum as one of my top punts. Unfortunately, I probably had two-thirds Gusty because Werdum pulled off that submission. I mean, that's why I wanted him in some contests, and as a punt, he looked great. I thought Gustafsson was getting the edge on the feet, and I think he had him on his feet all day, but the one thing he can't do is get taken down by Werdum, which, to be honest, I thought he would have been better off at fending off those takedowns, especially after doing so well against better wrestlers like John Jones and Daniel Cormier. He did a pretty good job, so yeah, I was a little surprised. But Shogun and Lil Nog was an awful fight. Definitely didn't live up to the minus 200 finish chance. And for the main event, I mean, I did preach how much Whitaker is a better scorer in decisions, and we saw that. I mean, he out-volumed Till a lot, but Till did sneak his shots, pick his shots, and definitely stole a round or two. So it was a solid night. I'm definitely, like I said, super excited to get back some normality with these 11 fight, 12 fight, even 13 fight slates, not 15.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and talk about last week as well. So I'm looking at the optimal lineup. What you're able to do in Fantasy Crunchers, go back and lineup rewind and look at the results, which is pretty cool. So the optimal lineup had Werdum, Ronson, Craig, Aspinall, Wood, and Chimev. $50,000 used, and that was the optimal if you guys had it, which I'm assuming some people did because it maxed out that salary. We preached last week it was all GPP. I mean, there were three upsets out of the six. Two. And one toss-up. But, I mean, again, like so many people when they're building their lineups, how many people pick two punts? It's so hard to do unless you're running 150 lineups and single entry. I highly doubt we saw a single entry with this combination, which is why we were preaching, hey, Chimev might not be the best option. But, again, two upsets, totally a GPP type of weekend with 15 games to choose from, or 15 fights, rather, to choose from.
Yeah.
So I totally get it. So I'm willing. I'm so ready to get back to this 11 fight slate, not 15. But yeah, so we can go ahead and touch base on that before we move on. Kevin, you want to touch base on anything else?
No, just that's interesting. I mean, we're pretty actually all over a lot of that, except for Ronson. I'd say that's the only thing that was a little surprising. And I'm surprised with that many fights. I was all over Wood, and because he had a better finish chance and was a good fighter. But you said Wood was in the optimal lineup, which is interesting to me, as he didn't get the finish, and I thought it would be with 15 fights you're gonna need all finishes. But
I got off the screen, but I think he ended with over 100.
Yeah, so that'll do it. I mean, that'll do it. He's a good fighter, so that's good. We weren't too far off, actually. Now when you put it like that, just Ronson was definitely one of the, like I said, the slate breakers. There's always going to be didn't have any of him, so it would have been nice to have him. But yeah, moving on until this 11 fight slate, let's get into it. Right off the rip, we have Chris Gutierrez versus Cody Durden. Interesting fight to start off the night. We got Gutierrez here. I like him a lot. He's got a strong skill set and is fairly battle tested in the UFC, which is what you want to see against a newcomer. I mean, Cody Durden is making his UFC debut, and like I said, Gutierrez has been there before. But Durden is pretty well rounded, but he hasn't fought anybody. As I said, he's making his UFC debut, and in other organizations, he really hasn't been tested yet either. I think Gutierrez is going to look to keep this fight standing and pick his shots on Durden, as he's definitely a superior striker. I could also see Gutierrez doing that all the way to a decision, though. He's an okay scorer in his decisions, but not to the point where I definitely would be comfortable with him not getting a finish. So I am leaning a little bit towards fading this fight off the rip, though I do think Gutierrez is a fairly safe play with his experience and Durden being far less experienced and taking the fight on pretty short notice. So I do think Gutierrez is a little safer, and it's not the worst finish chance in the world, but it is expected to go the distance, and I think for good reason.
So Gutierrez is at 30% owned. I think the only reason that he's that decently owned is because of his price tag.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep, you got it. So, and then we look at Durden, 12.8% owned, so virtually no ownership there.
Yeah, I don't have too much interest in him. So if you want to take a swing at Gutierrez, hope he gets the finish. Maybe a little more intriguing cash games with that ownership, but yeah, I'm fine with fading this one. Moving on, we have Jamal Emmers versus Timur Valiev. Timur makes his long-awaited UFC debut Saturday. I mean, he's 16-2. He's been around the block a little bit. Unlike Durden, I mean, he's though he's making his first walk to the octagon, he has more real experience at high levels. He's fought in the PFL, WSOF. I mean, he's also 1-1 against the previously mentioned Chris Gutierrez, the guy I just talked about, his 9,200. He's 1-1 against him. So, you know, he's got some good experience against good guys. Emmers, on the other hand, is 0-1 in the UFC with his sole loss coming by split decision to Giga Chikadze, the guy we know so well. I think this is a live fight. Both guys have a real shot to win, in my opinion. But this fight has a very low finish chance. A lot of that can be attributed to Timur being a not-so-great finisher and the favorite. So, I mean, he is expected to win. And if he does, he's probably not going to get the finish. He's not a super great finisher. Emmers is a slightly better finisher, but not super great himself. So I do think there are better options on this card. Like the first fight, there's potential, and there's no super red flags. But I do think I don't think you need to be super picky on the slate. I think there's a couple good obvious options. So I mean, if you want to save some salary, I think you can get a winner out of team over at 8,400. I don't hate that, but again, I wouldn't expect to finish.
Yeah, so it sounds like off the rip here, this might not be a card where we get six finishes like we were banking on last slate. So it kind of makes sense that if you want to fill in your roster with somebody here from this fight, 31% ownership and 14% ownership might be a decent leverage spot, but again, it's still like on the borderline if maybe one of your last roster spots.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes sense to me. Moving on, we have Eric Spicely versus Marcus Perez. This is a fight you should have your eyes on more, 100%. I've seen Eric Spicely around before. I can't remember where, if I was at a gym he trained at one time, but he's a local Mass guy I've seen him around. He was cut by the UFC, and after being 0-1 in his return, I really do think this next fight decides if he's ever going to fight in there again, because he's been cut, he's back, not doing great since he's been back, and he hasn't been great during his entire time in the UFC. I think he's 2-5 in the organization, which isn't enough to really keep your job. And yes, but one thing that does make this fight a good target is that he has over an 80% finishing rate while also having a losing finishing rate by 80% as well, actually 80% on the dot. So that means he's either going to usually finish or be finished. So that is definitely something that interests me and I want to target. Marcus Perez is a good finisher himself with a finish rate of 75%. But and most of those are by way of submission. That worries me a little bit because Spicely's not bad. He's got decent grappling. And his only two wins in the UFC came by way of submission. So, like, he's got some grappling potential there. But Perez hasn't ever been submitted or finished. So that's the one thing that is really deterring me a little bit away from Spicely and more so on Perez. Like I said, Spicely is good at finishing and being finished as well. But Perez has never been finished. And I'm definitely a little higher on Perez for 800 more here. He's obviously the favorite too. But I also don't have a ton of faith in Perez being an amazing fighter. So I wouldn't be surprised if he loses. But I think he has a better chance to finish, and I do see GPP potential here. This fight comes in as a -180 finish chance.
Okay, -180. So that's pretty decent. I'd say percentage-wise, that's upward of like 65%. Perez he's sitting at a 67% win percent a chance, which means his opponent is coming at 33, and his ownership is actually fourth highest on the slate. So if you're looking to differentiate yourself, this could be like a make-or-break moment for you. Going back to the ownership on Spicely, he's at 13.6, and it sounds like you have no interest in Spicely.
Not a ton. I mean, he is a decent finisher. That's the one thing. But again, Perez hasn't shown me that he's an easy finish. He's not a free meal. So, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. But yeah, definitely was more interested in Perez.
Got it. So 37%, pretty high decent, or pretty high ownership percentage. So let's continue on.
All right, moving on. We have Ray Borg versus Nate Maness. Now, this is one that I don't think will end in a finish. It has a +170, but there's still upside even without one. Nate Maness enters the UFC. Solid fighter, 11-1 record. And he's fighting against veteran and previous title contender Ray Borg. Ray Borg is not a great finisher, and I would be weary of picking him at 9K if that's what you're banking on.
Okay.
But here's the thing. If you're banking on a finish, Ray Borg is a little bit, you know, a little bit scary, but his upside is crazy because he can get it going like a mofo with his wrestling. He can ground and pound guys. He can take him down. He can beat him up a bit. And the question is, can he do it in this fight? Last fight, he couldn't against Ricky Simone. But before that, in his past three fights, he had a combined 23 takedowns, which is insane. That's whatever that is, almost eight takedowns a fight. So that will get you points real quick. So I do think Ray can take him down. And if he does really get his wrestling going, he's going to rack up them points. And here's the thing. If he gets his takedowns going and then somehow gets a finish, say, in the second or third, like I said, don't expect it. But he still can finish. And if he does, after getting some takedowns going, he has a very high chance of being the highest scorer on the card. Mm-hmm. So you're going to want him, obviously, if that's the case. So this is a more of a high risk, high reward, some gambling. But I, like I said, if he can just get his wrestling going without a finish, he's still going to score pretty well.
Well, then the percentage ownership screams GPP on this as well. So Borg is sitting at 28, and you said Maness? Is that how you pronounce it?
Maness, yep.
Maness, got it. 26%. So they're both coming at very low ownership. Definitely a make or break fight is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think Borg would definitely be one of those people to take in, like I said, like maybe a bigger tournament. Just he's got some risk to him, but I mean, you want that separation if he ends up being the highest scoring guy on the card, which right. He absolutely could be.
All right.
So yeah, moving on, we got Gerald Meerschaert versus Ed Herman. Ed Herman's still kicking around, still active, and he's still a formidable fighter. I mean, he's coming to this fight riding a 2-fight win streak, which is interesting to me. I mean, he's still making a career off this. I mean, I think Ed Herman was on the second season of The Ultimate Fighter, something like that. He's been around for a very long time. Meerschaert, on the other hand, is coming off a disappointing knockout loss very early in the first round to Ian Heinisch. If you remember that a couple weeks ago or whatever it was, months ago, I can't remember, but what enough to remind me that we had Meerschaert in a couple contests. So like the Spicely and Perez fight, breaking down the numbers in this one is important. Meerschaert has a 93% finishing rate, which is obviously crazy. Yeah. And Herman boasts a pretty still impressive 80% finishing rate. So now that is intriguing to me. Now, 77% of Meerschaert's losses and 60% of Herman's have also come by way of finish. So Meerschaert is he's a glass cannon. You know what I mean? Sure. 93% finish rate, 77% of his losses come by finish. I mean, he's probably going to finish or get finished. So, and Herman's like a slightly better at not getting finished and slightly worse at finishing. So he's pretty similar in that. They're both very proficient grapplers, with Meerschaert being a little more reliant on his grappling. I mean, that's kind of his bread and butter. That's where most of his finishes come. Herman carries a little more power on his feet and a little more stand-up ability, but I think this is a great GPP target. I think this is one of those like make or break ones like you're talking about. Very similar in price, very similar in line. Both make sense to me. They really do. Herman is slightly less efficient finisher. Meerschaert gets finished often. Herman is cheaper. Meerschaert is the favorite. I mean, and he'll probably carry less ownership due to his price being a little more expensive. So
get ready for this then. This is going to surprise you. Meerschaert is at 44% owned percentage, which is coming in at the second highest on the slate. And Herman is at 19.4. So if you want a GPP play, it looks like Herman is the way to go for me, at least for leverage.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, especially where Meerschaert, I mean, I do like Meerschaert a little more. He's a little more crisp right now, I guess. But again, Ed Herman's coming off a 2-win streak, and they weren't bombs either. Like, Ed Herman is still kicking. He's not just some guy hanging around. I mean, he's still efficient. And Meerschaert, we just saw him get devastated. And when he loses pretty big. So there's definitely some leverage here. And it's not the farthest line in the world. Meerschaert's coming in as a minus 170 favorite. No. Herman has a plus 140, so
60-40% win percentage for both of them. So
yeah, so there you go. That's not
it's that almost
bad.
It's almost a toss up at that point.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see this. So yeah, if you want to take Meerschaert in cash games, I don't think it's ownership makes sense, but again, it's pretty volatile. So I'd almost lean more so for Ed Herman on GPPs.
Absolutely.
So moving on, we got Frankie Sanes versus Jonathan Martinez. This is an interesting fight between two experienced fighters. Martinez isn't coming in at a huge finish chance here, but he is a good finisher. I like him, and I think he makes an intriguing GPP play if the ownership makes sense. What's the ownership looking like just off the rip?
For Martinez? Yeah. If I can read it right, 36%.
Okay, so he's super high. So maybe not as much as GPP. I mean, I'm surprised he's that high.
People are watching our videos, Kevin. That's what
I was going to say. They're picking
their knowledge up.
Yeah, exactly. Sanes, here's the thing. Maybe it's because Sanes can be finished, especially on his feet. And that's where Martinez is good. He's a good striker. But the one thing is about Frankie Sanes is he's a good wrestler with good grappling ability. He was a good D1 wrestler, I think, at Arizona State. And he can make the fight ugly for anyone. So I would not expect a finish if you pick him. He's an absolutely awful finisher, but you might be able to steal one with Frankie at 7,600, especially where that would be a big leverage play if that many people are taking Martinez. He is actually a decent scorer too when he doesn't finish. So again, it's not like he's just going to steal one and you get 40, 40 points for a win. You know what I mean? Like, sure. he's gonna get a, you know, a couple takedowns, and that's the thing. If he does win, he's probably gonna have to do it with his wrestling, which means he's gonna have to string some takedowns, some passes, some ground and pound, and you're gonna get some points there. So if you think you can steal one, I mean, that's not. I think the Vegas line is definitely closer than, or this fight's closer than the Vegas line would reflect. So. Mm-hmm. It might not be a bad leverage play there, but if you want to fade this all together, I don't think that's super stupid either.
15% on, what's his last name?
Pronounce it Saints.
Funny. Saints. 15%. So, yeah, definitely a leverage play.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. And then, yeah, Jonathan Martinez, though, I do think he's better on his feet, so don't think that's a dumb play either. Moving on to the main card, I think this is a really good one to target. We have Kevin Holland and Trevin Giles. The first fight, I'm curious to hear ownership on this one. I'll go through it first. And then I'm curious to hear. The first fight on our main card brings another solid target, like I just said. This is Kevin Holland is a really good fighter, makes for a good GPP option. This is another fight where I just don't have the same amount of confidence that Vegas had this one right. They have a minus 225 for Holland, plus 175 for Giles. And I don't know about that. I mean, Giles coming off a fight of the night performance win over James Krause. James Krause is a very good fighter. James Krause was on a 6-fight win streak in the UFC. He was 6 in a row in the UFC, and Giles just stopped that. I mean, that's pretty friggin' impressive, man. And these guys are a similar record, similar finish ability, even have similar names, Trevin and Kevin. I mean, they both these guys only have 2 finish losses apiece. Both of their losses come by way of submission. Or finish losses come by way of submission. I mean, it's just very close on paper. I do think Giles might have a little better wrestling than Holland, and Holland has the striking and size. I think Holland's like 6'3". I want to say Giles is like 6 foot, so Holland's a little bigger. And they even throw similar volume. You look at their stats and their numbers, they're throwing the same amount of strikes. I mean, it's just a really damn close fight on paper. So if you want to take the favorite in Holland, that's cool. I get it. You want to ride that wave. But if you want to take Giles as a punt, he's going to be the first one I mentioned tonight. He's a deadly guy. I mean, if you can beat James Krause in a fight, you can beat anybody that is outside of the top 10, and Kevin Holland isn't quite in the top 10. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's kind of funny that you mentioned he was at, what, minus 225, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, well, he opened up at minus 211, which is funny because you said this Vegas line doesn't really represent how close the match is, but it's moving more away from being close, yeah. which is even weirder. So the ownership is in that very awkward range, 35% for Holland, and Giles is at 22.5%. It's like, is it too high? Is it too low? It's right there in the middle. So yes, yeah. Another matchup that could make or break you. And you're kind of convincing me that Giles could be one of the best punts. And you said that he's going to be the first one that you mentioned. 7,300 is really, really cheap for somebody who you said is pretty much in an even fight. So I definitely am all over Giles now for that reason.
Yeah, I think you do want a piece of this fight either way. I mean, these guys both throw really good volume too. So I do think you want a piece of this fight either way.
If you're a betting man, you heard it here first. Giles might be a good favorite or good underdog to target.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, this kind of gives me, I mean, the last, and again, not to get anyone's hopes up, but the last 2 times I kind of felt like this underdog presence was the slate before with – who was it? Johns and Alvarez, I think. Oh, yeah.
Yep,
and both of them won. So I'm getting a little of that
tune your own horn, tingle. Right?
Yeah. I'm getting a little bit of that feel with that one. But moving on, we got Lando Venata versus Bobby Green. These two have fought before, and last time they fought, it was a crazy good fight. I love this fight. It was a fight of the night, but it was a draw, unfortunately. Because Lando Venata landed an illegal knee, and that took a point away, so he actually would have won. Now, this fight has a really high chance of ending in a decision at plus 190, which, I mean, can be a deterrent. But again, it's not always just about finish chance. Everyone knows how much I love preaching finish chance, but that's not what it's all about all the time. I mean, these guys throw crazy volume. Last time they fought, they both scored takedowns. This is a 3-rounder last time they fought, too, keep in mind. So it's the same thing as this. They both cleared 90 significant strikes apiece, landed, and both scored takedowns, with Lando Venata scoring a little more in striking. He cleared 100 strikes, and I think he had, like, 3 takedowns. So that's crazy. That's a war. Now, I usually like this pricing for GPP as there's obvious leverage. You know what I mean? They're so close. There's going to be a divide. But I'm looking at this one a little differently. I kind of have a hard stance. I think Vanata is a better pick here. I'm just going to say pick Vanata. He should have won the first time. And the thing is about Vanata is, like I said, he had more takedowns. He had more volume. He had more everything. But and then he's just deducted that point. But I'm not taking Vanata because he's a guarantee. Like, he's winning again. He's that much better than Bobby Green, you know? I'm taking him because, like, remember how, like, when someone pulls out a fight and you have a minus whatever, minus 500 for 8,300, it's like you don't think about it. You just do it.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean it's going to happen that way. But this is one of those scenarios. You have a guy who beat the guy the last time. He was an amazing scorer the last time. And Lando Vanata is just really good. And if you're pressed for salary, you can afford usually 8,200. Now, if you're really pressed and you wanted to take Green at 8,000 and say you're like 200 pressed, that's fine too. It was a really close fight, like I said. But I just think it's just very obvious to me, like, why wouldn't you take Vanata? He won the first time. He was better everywhere. And he's gonna, even in a decision, he can score so many points. You know what I mean?
Makes perfect sense, yeah. It certainly does. It seems like the public agrees with you. 32% ownership and 23% on Green, even though it's that close salary. So, like I said, the people are getting sharper. They're watching our videos. I'll just say it one more time.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that might not make it into my GPPs. Like I said, usually this price range, like when we were talking about Paul Craig and Agilov last week, or whatever, whoever it was, and Tigalov, we were all over that for GPP. Usually this pricing screams GPP. Not for this one so much for me. I don't think it's going to end in a finish, but I think, like I said, Vanata's more of a core, in my opinion, just because it just makes sense.
Right.
But moving on, we have Vicente Luque versus Randy Brown. Another good fight to target here. Like I said, I was leery of the first couple fights, but I was telling you, you don't really need to be picky because there was more good fights down the line. And you've seen, I mean, over the past five fights ish, I've been like, that's good. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There are some solid options. And this is another one of these ones, another mask guy in Randy Brown. Brown is a good fighter. I really believe that, but I think Luke is a step ahead. This is one of those situations where if common opponents are something that matter to you, if you're into that, which some people really find that important, and I do to a degree. Styles make fights. It's not as cut and dry as, say, common opponents in boxing or wrestling or something like that. You know what I mean? But, like, styles do make fights, so it's not as cut and dry. But if that is something that matters to you, Vicente Luque finished Nico Price twice. He's fought Nico Price twice, finished him both times. Nico Price knocked Brown out.
Got it.
Luque also knocked out Bilal Muhammad, who also beat Brown. So that's two commons over him. And I think, ironically, Brown's other loss was his third loss. I can't remember what it was, but that guy also beat Luque, so that didn't really tell us much. But both Brown and Luque are really good fighters, and I do think Brown deserves a punt spot this week. I'm going to put him in there. He's a good finisher, really high talent level, good hands. But like I said, Vicente Luque is very well-rounded. He's got lunch boxes in his hands, and there's a reason he's the 12th ranked fighter in the world in one of the deepest weight classes right now. So I do like Vicente Luque here. Really high finish chance on this one, and Vicente Luque, just he throws bombs.
Luque at 41%, which is actually the third highest on the slate. Very noteworthy. And Brown is at 20.6. So the ownership on these overall in this fight combined is actually pretty high. So.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, that's why Luque is more – he's made it kind of into my – I'll go over it later, but he's more core.
Got it.
And then the co-main, I'm not even going to make a stupid joke about me fading women's fights because, I mean, just every time, and people always say stuff about it, but, I mean, I'm probably going to fade this one. I'm just going to do it. But I will say this one is a little more intriguing to me. There's a chance I might not. And if you don't fade this, I don't hate you for it. Maya hasn't gotten a finish in 5 years, and Calderwood hasn't been much better. Hence why it has a plus 255 chance of going ending within the distance. Mm. So it's going to probably end in a decision as usual. We'll see, but this is a talented fight. They're both top six in the world. Very talented girls. The one positive I will say is these girls throw a ton. ton of volume, a ridiculous amount, slightly more with Joanne Calderwood. Now, she's expensive, but she can – that's the thing. This is why you do have to pay attention to certain girls' fights like this, because some of them make sense. Like, if they can't finish – but they're in really good shape and they're 120 pounds or whatever they are, and they throw a lot of volume and they can hit their price point with the striking, then it almost doesn't matter. Like, if Calderwood lands 140 punches and yeah, she doesn't have the power to knock her out, that can almost be better. That means she's getting 70 points in significant strikes, you know what right. I mean? So
no, yeah, that makes sense. So if we look at the ownership on this, Calderwood's at 28.4% and Maya. Goodness. 21%.
You're gonna be doing MMA. You gotta learn the Brazilian last names.
I have to learn another language. We've already talked about this. It's crazy. But yeah, 21%, 20 and 21%. So the combined ownership's around 50. So still lower than the majority of these men's fights. So if you want to use it for leverage, but probably not. I don't know.
Probably not. I'll put this in the rate board category where, like, say Calderwood just lays it on her for three rounds and finishes her late, she could end up being one of the higher scores, 100%. So there, it's a risk. I mean, you're really risking a +255 finish chance. But it's if you're one of those people who wants to really separate yourselves, I mean, and high risk, high reward, not the worst option in the world.
Got it. All right, I'm ready for the big one.
Main event, super hype about this one. I mean, some main events I really not super excited about. This one I'm really excited about. I'm all over this one. You need a piece of it. You got to have a piece of it. I'm going to tell you, I've been on the Edmund train for a very long time. I think this kid is the truth. He represents the future of MMA, and he was brought up as somewhat of an MMA like prodigy child. He was training with Ronda Rousey when he was 12 and some of the best guys in the world. And he's really the future. I mean, people are having their kids, you know, that's their sport, MMA. You know what I mean? They're doing jiu-jitsu 2 days a week. They're doing wrestling 2 days a week. They're doing striking 2 days a week. And they're trying to make them good MMA fighters. And the kids like to do that. So it's cool to see. And this is kind of the newer age is what Edmund is. Edmund Shahbazyan. And he's got a real tough opponent for in front of him right now against Derek Brunson. Derek Brunson's a terrifying man. I mean, he has ridiculous power. He's a top-tier fighter. And here's the thing. If you want to target this fight, you want Edmund, you better hold Edmund in regard as an elite fighter if you pick him. Because if he isn't elite, he isn't beating Brunson. That's the thing. Brunson has 7 losses, and the names are unreal, okay? Out of his 7 losses, I mean, I think this is just 6 of them. Israel Adesanya, Jacare Souza twice, Anderson Silva, Robert Whittaker, Yoel Romero.
When I know some of those names, that's bad.
That's a problem. Yeah, exactly. I mean, bro, like if he's losing someone, it has to be an elite person. Sure. He's beaten everyone else. And the thing is, he starched some big names and elite names too. I mean, he knocked out Loihoto Machida, amazing striker, knocked out Uriah Hall, amazing striker. I mean, he has ridiculous power. He has a wild style, and he's got the hands for it. But the thing is, he's not as polished as Edmund. Edmund is one of those fighters. I mean, he's got that crispness to him on his feet. He's starting to remind me of, like, McGregor, the fluidity. I mean, he just picks his shots. He's art in motion, man. You got to watch him if you haven't. He's just so fun to watch. I think he could be the future of this division. But, Derek Brunson is nobody's free meal. So you do want a piece of this. I have faith in Edmund. I really do. I'm going to have Edmund in most of my contests. Hope I don't regret it, because I do think Brunson is my top punt of the week. He's going to be coming in as my top punt.
One thing you didn't mention, and we touched base on this before we started the video, this is a 3-rounder. So it keeps the ownership down on Brunson even more, 13%. So that's actually pretty darn low for somebody who seems like they have a fighter's chance. And then Edmund here, 54.6 is the highest on the slate.
Yeah, I'm going to probably be riding that train, to be honest. I'm going to be on the Edmund train. If you take Brunson and he wins, I mean, don't shove it in my face, because I mean, I'm all over Brunson too.
I took a sip of water and almost went all over the screen, so
I do love Derek Brunson, man. He's a dog, and he's a former wrestler. I got love for him. He throws missiles. I mean, this is one, even if it was a 5-rounder, I would never consider stacking this. And I did want to say, obviously in a 3 you don't want to stack it, but I do think someone's getting starched this fight. I think they're going to keep it standing, and either Derek's going to make it ugly and he's going to put Edmund to sleep, or Edmund's just going to be way too technical, pick his shots, and it's going to be a slow death for Derek Brunson before he gets finished. So,
all right. So we have a total breakdown of this slate. Now let's kind of bring it all together, Kevin, and we'll go back to, I guess we'll start with the core fights.
Yeah, core fights and core plays. I mean, plays, Edmund Shahbazyan, obviously, he's the best fighter on the slate, in my opinion, just straight up. He's given me no reason to doubt him yet, and that's where my stud money's going, right off the rip. So I'm building a lineup around him. Lando Venata scores very well, even without a finish, and he basically won that fight the first time. Again, I'm not saying he's the most guaranteed to win, but it just makes sense to me. It really does. Okay. And then Vicente Luque. Very powerful striker, has a nice balance of technique and finish ability. Doesn't lose to anyone who isn't a somebody. He really doesn't. So, and that's important to talk about in MMA, because if someone has, you got to look at the losses. You know what I mean? If someone's only losing to studs, they're going to probably keep continuing to beat everyone who is not.
Sure.
GPP plays Perez, good finish ability. Spicely can be finished pretty easily. And there's a potential there. I wouldn't take him in cash. Too volatile, but I do think it makes GPP upside. It makes sense, GPP upside. Ray Borg, he has a real chance, and he probably won't get the finish, but he can run a takedown clinic. You're almost like, as much as sometimes in GPP you're banking on a finish, sometimes for fighters like this and Merab Dvalishvili, like, you're banking on almost, can he run a takedown clinic? You know what I mean? Because that's going to be way more than a finish. So if he can run a takedown clinic, awesome. If he can run a takedown clinic and get a late finish in the third, oh my God.
Yeah,
he's gonna
perfect.
He's going to be separating you. So definitely high risk, high reward.
28%, just reiterating.
Just reiterating, yeah. Yep. And at a high price. So that's definitely some separation. Kevin Holland, crazy power, crazy finish ability. Giles does scare me, hence why Giles is going to be one of my punts, as we talked about. And Kevin Holland is a GPP play, not cash, for that reason. And then I think you want to target Mearshart and Ed Herman, because both good finishers and both fighters can be finished. And it almost sounds more Ed Herman just because of the ownership. Mearshart's ownership.
It's crazy low.
And yeah, Ed Herman's is super low. So moving on to the punts. Lastly, Derek Brunson. Like I said, crazy power. He's knocked out crazy good elite fighters who are very crisp technical strikers. He makes fights ugly whether you want it or not. And he's only lost us really good guys himself. Randy Brown, as I talked about, really good finish ability, crisp striking as well. And then Trevin Giles, well-rounded, as I said, and I think this line is a lot closer than previously advertised.
All right, so we're getting good at this because I don't have any questions for you, and you pretty much covered absolutely everything that there is to cover. It's 11 fights. Guys, we're rounding out on 37 minutes. That used to be a long video for us, but now that is short. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this content. Thanks, Kevin, again. And if you guys want to show the support, please hit that subscription button. Please hit that notification bell. And, of course, please smash that like button. Again, we really appreciate all the support coming from the community. And with all that being said, guys, have a great rest of your weekend. And let's cash.